Good afternoon. Today is Monday, April the 30th, 124th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon from Security National, wearing one of his hats. Well, actually, he's wearing his suspenders today, Randy Yans. Hey, guy.
Hi, Brian.
This afternoon, we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about logs. Buying logs, how do you get logs, the whole industry. And it was funny, I was talking with somebody last week about the logging industry and what it used to be like around here. And you start ticking off all the mills that used to be and all the thises and all the thats and how much the area really has changed in the last 15 or 20 years. So I'm sure there'll be a little bit of reminiscing involved also.
Oh, but yeah, there were.
Logs and timber and trees.
In the last 15, 20 years.
Yeah, we'll do it when we come back.
I'm Jim Mongi, principal of St. Mary's Catholic School and Preschool. Our preschool program is designed to teach and model basic educational and social skills that children will need for success in kindergarten. Students learn about numbers, shapes, and colors. They begin pre-reading and writing. They develop problem-solving and sharing skills. They learn that school is fun. St. Mary's Preschool provides the foundation for a lifetime of learning. Give us a call today at 822-3877, license number 125-401-910.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 416. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Randy Yans, but before we do, our quote this afternoon. I wonder if we could use this one, change it a little bit. A bird in the tree is worth two in the bush. Huh? You like that one?
That's very true when you're talking about a lot of things. You know, I even brought my own today, too. So.
Did you? Okay, yeah. you hit me with yours. Let's see if that one's better.
A sure ticket to failures is to try to please everybody. And that was Bill Cosby.
Okay.
That's a good one. I like that one.
Yeah.
Because that's the truth.
Yeah. Oh, and my bird in the tree isn't?
No. They're both very true. Anyway.
Let's talk about, I guess, semantics early on. And I can remember talking to Tim McKay back when he was one of the original community commenters. And I said, Tim, what is sustainable harvest?
Okay.
And the first words, and this was back pre-spotted owl, this is the clear cutting and all that time. Depends on who you ask.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, so if we've got an industry that at that point was just kind of on the first phase of regulatory and conditions, and nobody knew what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So have we gotten to the point, Randy, with the industry and the related industries that we'll be talking about, where there's agreement on definitions?
Well, I think they've made a lot of progress. I don't know, when was that quote given to you, about 15 years ago?
Oh, no, this was, let's see, we're doing it probably 25 to 30 years ago.
Yeah, there's been a lot of progress there. I mean, a lot of research, a lot of studies, you know, sponsored by the timber companies. You know, they're under a different type of harvest plan than most typical, you know, timberland owners are in Humboldt County. They're under what they call a habitat conservation plan, where they've done the research and they've come up with sustainable, you know, yields based on, you know, the inventory of land they have, you know, what type of site conditions those lands are, you know, what type of, you know, environmental and you know, constraints, you know, creeks, watersheds, and, you know, and then also a lot of studies on endangered species. So, you know, that's how they get to their what they, you know, typify as a sustainable yield, which is, you know, goes all the way up the chain of command. You know, it's a extensive review process. I mean, they take years and millions of dollars to form. So I think, you know, Mr. McKay would be quite proud of the progress that they've made, you know, on those fronts.
Is it too simplistic when we talk about timberlands and sustained harvesting? And if we took a grade, because I remember John Groby, I don't know why, because I never took a class from him, but when he was at Humboldt, and he took a grid, and it was a 10 by 10 grid, said, you have a 100-year sustainable harvest plan, and you just rotate through the squares, and at the end of 100 years, everything has been cut, everything has grown back, and you have a sustainable yield.
Okay.
And then somebody, and I don't believe it was myself, but somebody said, Yeah, but, and the but was the trees growing vertically. So what might initially be 1/100th later on isn't, because the tree mass, or whatever it's called, has grown significantly during the period of time, and your 1/100th should really be like maybe 1/105th, you know, growing it out a little bit as you start to get this biomass.
Yeah, no, it, vertical. It does.
And then
compound
it starts going
pretty,
really
yeah,
weird for
it
some
compounds
of us.
Quickly. It's amazing how quick they grow. You know, I just gave a talk the other day at the Harbor Commission Symposium, and one of the questions was, you know, is why all of a sudden we have exports? Well, it's because the Russians didn't practice sustainable harvest. I mean, they have totally different type of climates. It takes them, you know, in some places of the Siberian boreal forest, 120 years to, you know, get to a harvest cycle. And you know,
really tight rings, though, huh?
Yeah, and you got to remember it was government subsidized. There wasn't a lot of the government was throwing money at an industry. They weren't, regulating it. Corruption came in. They took all of their low-hanging fruit, so to speak. You know, now, I mean, what's left in Russia is so hard to get that essentially the industry's become bankrupt. It would be some of their forest where they're harvesting now. You've got to move a log, 1,500 miles to the market. You know, we have a hard time moving 300 miles.
That's tough for that ox.
No.
The steam donkey doesn't have a long chain.
Well, that's not much more than a steam donkey anymore there. I mean, they have, most of their equipment's on old Russian tank platforms. It's just old. I mean, it's amazing. Their production to China has fallen, by 50%. And, America's and the U.S., the U.S. region has increased like 800%. And it's still just a blip, of that 50% that the Russians have lost.
It's challenging, I think, for people outside the industry to really grasp what timber is, the cost, even the concept of board feet.
Mm-hmm.
How do you define board feet?
Well, you have to go through the scaling handbook on that. And essentially, you've got...
Okay, management level.
Right.
So let's dummy this thing way down.
A board foot, if you look at this is a tough one to explain easily. Let's say an 18-inch cylinder that's 25 feet long, and there's no taper in that cylinder. You have a table that would give you a quantified amount of, finished lumber product that would come out of that cylinder. So, 18 inches would be,
So they figure that calculation.
Yeah.
And that's
how they
determine. That'd
probably be like a 400 board foot log.
Okay.
Or something.
So that's then how they determine how many board feet are available for a timber harvest plant.
Yeah, exactly. And when you ship your logs to the mill, they have, a third-party scaler in most cases. Some of the mills now are using some in-house, and then they have check scale by third-party scalers. That third-party scaler is kind of like the judge,
Just to make sure.
Yeah, just to make sure everything's, on the up and up. And they inventory, the board feet or estimate the board feet in that log, and then they take out, defect, if there's areas where there's rot or, lots of knots. They grade it and then estimate the board footage and pay it. I mean, they've pretty much refined that system over the years. It's amazing how efficient they've become.
No owl nest cut into the wood, though.
No.
Yeah.
Okay. No, those owls, they don't get bothered much anymore.
Imagine that. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 4:24. We'll be back with more from Randy Gans.
Hi, this is Eric from Northwood Chevrolet Hyundai. You know, I think a lot of people forget that we have a great selection of used cars available. We might not have the inventory that some of the larger dealerships do, but I know our quality used cars stack up against anybody else's in the county. Plus the fact, if we don't have something on our lot, come on in, see us, and we can probably find it for you. We have a quality selection of some very nice used cars, what most people were looking for. But again, if we don't have it on our lot, we can probably find it for you at Northwood Chevrolet Hyundai.
Hi, my name is Mark Diaz from Northwood Hyundai, and I invite you to come down. We're open from 8:30 in the morning till 6 o'clock at night for your shopping convenience. Closed Sundays to be with family. And as my dad used to say, don't bring much money. You won't need it. That's Northwood Hyundai, 7th and D, Eureka.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time. It's 4:27. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Randy Yans. Randy, so we've had our basic little primer about timber.
Mm-hmm.
Timber and logs, the difference between the two?
Yeah, big difference. One's a finished product. Logs are raw, you know, basically raw materials. So it's a lot different now. There's a lot less places to sell those logs.
Because there's just so fewer mills?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's what, over 200 mills in Humboldt County in the 50s? I mean, it was a lot. Maybe even early 60s there was that many. You know, now we're down to, well, we've got Humboldt Redwood in Scotia. You've got Green Diamond, California Redwood, Simpson, you know, up in Corbell. You've got, Smidbauer, of course, George.
Yeah.
You've got some small mills like Mad River there. Arcata Forest Products, you know, that's a great one. You know, I mean, that mill was about to become a part of our history. And, actually Rex Bond put that deal together.
Yeah, so there are fewer choices.
Yeah.
More established relationships, obviously, because you're talking to everybody all the time. As you look at that situation, how much of it is being driven by lack of access of timber or logs? And how much of it is being driven by lack of market demand?
Well, I mean, you know, in the last 5 years, obviously, it's been lack of market demand where it's really put, you know, all these mills under a, you know, horrible crunch. And the landowners for that, you know, fact. Prior to that, though, I say that probably the biggest issue was the reduction of the U.S. and state forest harvest. I mean, that shut down all your inland mills. I mean, you lost Orleans, you lost a ton of them. I think only one that's, you know, between here and Reading now that's operating is Trinity River up there in Weaverville. Yeah, I mean, it was huge. I mean, that's where Eel River got a ton of their wood out of the, Mad River Forest. George has gotten it. You know, and it's just a shame. I mean, that wood out there is growing. I've heard estimates of 500 to 600 million feet a year growing in our forest.
Now, that would be in our 18-inch cylindrical tube. That's, yep.
Sadly, it's become, you know, fire fodder.
I've heard from a couple of folks that are indicating that the Forest Service is going to take a more liberal perspective, and they're going to start to allow either salvage harvesting or some managed activities in the forest. Are you hearing that also?
You know, I worry pretty much because, you know, Rob has about 5,000 acres of timberlands and ranches and stuff. And I worry about, you know, mainly from the private side. But if that is the case, that's great. I mean, a more consistent log supply for these mills is better. You know, it's better for the industry. You don't have feast or famine cycles where, you know, 1 year you have a really low price and no one is harvesting, so the loggers have no work for a year. Every year that you don't have work, you lose a few more loggers, and then all of a sudden when you do have a market, you have less competition to bid, or you don't have enough loggers to harvest to take advantage of
those to do the job
higher price cycles. So, I mean, if there was a more steady supply, I think it would be better for everybody, including the mills, because you'd get out of those high spikes in prices. You know, you would be more of a steady, you know, and obviously it'd be driven by the market, but, you know, for lumber, which is, you know, pretty abysmal right now, but
Is there any agricultural product that does see a pretty flat, predictable return? Because I would think they would all be subject to...
Well, they're all subject to market prices, but I think in the timber markets even, you know, it's in our local market, it's been more drastic. I mean, we, you know, 2009, we had almost no logging, and, you know, redwood prices were suppressed, Doug fir prices were suppressed. I mean, it was abysmal, you know, and I have a lot of friends that do, you know, are in the industry, and they weren't working that, you know, pretty much that whole summer. And then 2010, the inventories in the log decks at the mills were real low, and then there was a big rush, and we had an $825 price. You know, then everybody cut, you know, and you didn't find enough loggers. Last summer, we had the export market.
Let's hold that thought after the break.
Okay.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 4:31.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. We think of the Coast Guard as being gallant lifesavers, and they are. However, there's another side of the Coast Guard, faceless bureaucrats far away. 3 years ago, one wrote to the Humboldt County Fair Association to say they wanted back the Mendocino Lighthouse lens that's been atop the county fair's main entrance for 63 years. The fair offered to build a new building for the lens. A citizen group, Save Our Lens, began to raise money. Then the Ferndale Museum offered to give the lens a new home. Most letters to the Coast Guard have gone unanswered. 2 weeks ago, though, in an undated letter, the Coast Guard warned Ferndale it would soon send a Lempus to begin removing the lens. They didn't say when he'd arrive or give his name, but we think it's Grinch. In Rome 2,000 years ago, the famous orator Cicero spoke of the arrogance of officialdom. If he were here today, he'd put those Coast Guard bureaucrats in that category. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the people and places that make this a good place to live.
Good afternoon, KINS. News and Information Times, 4:35. We're back to talk shop this afternoon with Randy Gans. Randy, as we look at some of the current as well as the historical for imports and exports, I find the argument that some people have or the concern about value added. Okay. Great conceptually. Practically, though, if you don't have the mills, if you don't have the mills who can handle the product, while you might like to see finished product go out of here, if the market isn't there and the demand is for the raw product, I can't really see getting too torqued about sending out the raw product. Am I missing something here?
I was lucky. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to wear two hats, you know, on the export market. One is we own one of the operating docks in Humboldt Bay, and the other one is we own the timberland. So I got to sell logs to the export. You know, not every log is an export log. You know, there was very competitive prices offered by, you know, Sierra Pacific. I sold them a good portion of the logs we harvested last year, the higher quality, larger logs at a really good price. And it worked great. You've got to have people on, you know, that understand, you know, the characteristics when they're loading those logs up. Okay, this log needs to go to the docks. This log needs to go to the mills, you know, to do that.
The experience.
Yeah, right. It's good. And unfortunately, you know, with our logging, you know, we don't have a lot of operators right now that have that old, you know, seasoned crew. I mean, we're kind of in transition. You know, a lot of our seasoned people are getting older, and the industry has been, you know, beat up for a few years. But that set aside, the mills, you know, competed very well last year. You look at their inventories. For example, I know Simpson Timber sold at least 6 or 7 million feet of excess inventory because of the down domestic lumber market. Well, that's great for them because they have 400,000 acres. Their timber is growing every year. They are on the sustained yield. They need to harvest. They have to have, you know, in these markets, a outlet for surplus inventory, you know, at good prices. It helps their cash flow. It helps them keep their operations running and the capital investment there. to keep the mills running. So it's good. Also, I mean, another thing that people don't understand about the export market is, and this is where it'd be really key to have, you know, those forest services loosen their harvest, you know, policies on you know, government lands, is any log that's harvested on government, you know, land, state or federal, is what they call a yellow paint log. That log cannot be exported in a raw material form. So the Jackson State Forest had several large sales, and George Smidbar bought a lot of logs from there. Also, there's a downfall log that you get out of the export market that won't qualify for the specifications for export. You can move that log to the local mills. I sold wood to Smidbauer, you know, at a very cheap price. It's essentially a break-even price, but it's better than leaving it sitting out there in the hills.
So you said it had certain specifications if it's down.
Downfall. I mean, basically, what it is a log. On an export log, you've got, you know, certain characteristics for the quality. It's got to be 75% sound wood. It's got to be certain lengths, because they're putting it on a ship that costs them, you know, anywhere between $1 million to $1.5 million to charter to China. So they want to make sure that those logs fit in that ship's stow, you know, perfectly. They don't want to be shipping air to China. So they have you know, specifications on that. Also, you know, they can't send a log over there that's not sound. You know, I mean, 75% of it has to be sound, because they get paid, you know, on the net cubic meter. I mean, if you're shipping over, you know, 80% dead wood, you just lost 20%. But the mills, on the other hand, they can manufacture that log that doesn't qualify for export and still make a profit, you know, because they're doing a finished product. They get more overrun out of those logs. So I mean, it's a far better to have a competitive market than one where you're going through feasts and famines. And I hope the export market did that last year. I mean, it got a lot of people investing in harvest plans. It got a lot of people out in the woods working. It kept our, you know, I mean, there was a lot of logging trucks on the road. I mean, everybody kept, you know,
moving towards that general direction of the way it used to be.
So it was a good thing. And you know, this year I think the export market will be here, but it won't be, you know, the Chinese market have fluctuation in prices too. So, you know, this may be a good year for the mills to get in there and get their inventories up, because the prices will be lower.
When they cut the log lengths to whatever it is, it's to fit in the boats or the ship's hulls, they all have to be the same length?
Roughly? No, they have like a spectrum. They have like a 20 foot, 26 foot, 33 foot, and a 39 foot. This is, you know, the four that our particular exporter prefers.
So what is the best length? Or do you cut the trees to that length?
You cut them out. You cut them, you work with what you got. And if you have a good faller out there who understands, you know, okay, I'm coming into a tree that I think is going to meet the qualifications for the mill, and I've got four lengths, you know, you got to have predominantly 39 foot lengths. He'll segment that log up, you know, to meet that. I mean, a good faller will. And that's what my guys did. They carried a can of paint around them, and they painted them pink so that the logger wouldn't get confused on where they were. The pink ones went to Sierra Pacific.
Is there a story behind that?
Nope.
Okay.
That's just the
just
brightest color.
Color, yeah.
That was just the brightest color I could find at the stores.
So when the faller is out there, he uses his intuition or his experience to identify the quality of the tree, the lengths, or are they running around with tape measures along
I mean, you got to remember, these guys are cutting 8 hours a day. They've seen all kinds of species and trees. They know. I mean, they've walked through the, you know, the woods. They understand, because they get paid on scale. And if they're down there cutting a bunch of, you know, trees that are not merchantable, they're going to hear about it from the landowner or the logger, who gets paid on scale too. So you know, they're a pretty sophisticated crew.
How long does it take them to come up to that level of experience where they really...
Oh, it takes a while. You know, I mean, we
10 years?
No, years? No, it doesn't take that long. I mean, but it does take a while. I mean, we have a lot of green cutters right now, you know, that are just new into the industry, or you know, they're not very experienced, or they've moved over from who knows, operating equipment or whatever. But you know, seasoned cutters are worth every penny. So I mean, you know, when you're getting your bids on falling costs, you really want to consider that. You know, cheapest isn't always the best.
Gee.
I think that's what,
yeah.
Well, wow. I learned the hard way on that one several times.
I would imagine so, yeah. Good deal before or after the job's done.
Yeah, now you learn on those ones.
KINS, News and Information Times, 443. We'll be back with more from Randy Yans.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
Hi, this is Craig Brown, Dean of Students and Campus Ministry at St. Bernard's Catholic School. We're praying in these days how we can create an even more definite presence of Christ in the world around us. We pray we all have an opportunity to stop the rush of this time of year to give profound thanks for the many blessings our Lord has showered on us.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 446. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Randy Yans. Randy, the timber, the falling, the export, the import. I would have thought that each is kind of a specialty rather than all kind of related into one industry.
Mm-hmm.
When you're exporting, you mentioned China a couple of different times. Okay. Is that significantly different than exporting, say, to Atlanta or, let's say, Russia or Korea or...
Yeah, it the Chinese specifications are a lot different than the specifications for Japan and Korea. You know, it's a kind of a new and emerging market. They've been working with kind of a lesser quality wood, you know, that they've been importing from Russia, New Zealand. And they also have a lot of different uses for their wood over there. I mean, obviously they have a significant manufacturing industry in there. So, for example, I got a frog in my throat. But, for example, with last summer's prices, landowners saw probably, I mean, I don't remember a better price last year, you know, in the years I've worked, you know, on timber harvest plants.
There were a lot of guys drooling. Yeah.
For spruce, white fir, and even radiata pine, which isn't even a native species to this area. I mean, those prices were historically high. And the reason the Chinese want those particular logs, which are not, I mean, they were going to the power plants, you know, in prior years, is because they have so many manufacturing things. They go into picture frames, lawn furniture, you know.
Non-structural stuff.
Yeah, framing for, you know, cloth furniture. I mean, you name it. It went there. So it was a totally new market for spruce and white fir. And radiata pine that we hadn't had, you know, here in years. I mean, that log was worth $250 or $225, you know, per thousand. Last year it was worth $450 to $465. So it was a great deal.
Now, does that drive or influence cedar or redwood or any of the more traditional species that we have, or are they completely independent?
They're kind of independent. I mean, the Douglas fir market this year for China is basically driven off of construction and infrastructure. It has a higher sap content, so you can't use it for a lot of finished goods, so to speak. So, you know, that market will probably be down significantly this year.
Where does plywood fit into the whole mix? I know it's not fair to ask you in the last 30 seconds, but what is plywood made out of with the woods that are in our area that also goes out?
Boy, we don't have many plywood mills in our area anymore.
Well, even historically, what were they made of?
It was usually a larger log.
Some of the scraps on the
sides?
Yeah,
they peeled them, you know, so to speak, into a veneer. You know, and that's a great... I mean, it's been so long since a plywood mill's really been operating around here. I mean, that was before my time. I've been doing it for 25 years. So I can't
be
a good...
another one of those young buck things.
Yeah, I'm not going to be able a good source of information on that. Right. I know that there's plywood mills up in, you know, Washington, Oregon, where, you know, their industry is a little, and it's a little cheap. It's all, actually, it's a lot cheaper. One of California's biggest problems is just to get a tree to harvest costs us four times as much as an Oregon log.
The regulatory.
Yeah, because of the regulatory structure.
Thanks for coming by.
Okay.
Go sell something.
I will.
All right. We've been talking shop this afternoon with Randy Gans. Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug some of you. See you tomorrow.